slightly toward the sofa on which Cardenas sat, Humphreys clasped his hands together and began. Suppose I set you up in your own laboratory in some remote location on Earth. My father has holdings in Libya, for example. We could bring your grandchildren there to be with you. And what would I be expected to do at this remote laboratory? Cardenas asked. Her voice was without inflection, like an automaton's, her face a frozen mask. Nanomachines could be made to take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, can't they? Break the molecules down into carbon and oxygen atoms. The carbon could be buried, the oxygen released back into the air or sold as industrial gas, whatever. That could stop the greenhouse warming in a year or two. Cardenas' expression did not change. Nanotechnology is banned, you know that. No matter how you want to use it, you can't make nanomachines anywhere on Earth. You'd have the GEC, the world government, every religious nut on Earth going crazy if you even hinted that you're thinking of using nanotechnology. Humphreys smiled patiently. We won't tell them, for God's sake. We just start doing it, in secret, out in the Sahara, or the middle of the ocean, or Antarctica, anywhere. In a year, or maybe even less, they'll start noticing the carbon dioxide levels going down. We can take out the other greenhouse gases as well. They'll see that the greenhouse warming is lessening. Then we'll have them all by the balls. They'll have to accept what we're doing. They'll have no choice. And what happens if these nanomachines don't work exactly right? What happens if they start taking other carbon compounds apart? Like you, for instance. You're made of carbon atoms, aren't you? That won't happen. I know it won't happen, she said, because I won't do it. It's an absurd scheme. What's absurd about it? Humphreys demanded. A slight sardonic smile cracked Cardenas' facade. You don't have any idea of how enormous Earth's atmosphere is. Do you know how many tons of carbon dioxide you'd have to remove? Billions. Tens of billions, at least. You'd have to cover Africa with nanomachines to remove that much carbon dioxide. I'm sure that's an exaggeration, Humphreys muttered, scowling. Cardenas shot to her feet, startling George. All right. You'd merely have to cover the Sahara Desert. It's still beyond belief. But, and you'd never be able to keep it secret. Not a program of that scale. But it could be done, couldn't it? It could be started, she admitted. Until some fanatic drops a nuke on us, or laces our drinking water with plague bacillus. I can protect you against terrorists, Humphreys said. Cardenas paced to the window, obviously thinking furiously. Turning back to Humphreys, she said, Using nanomachines on that scale is an invitation to disaster. Some fruitcake could steal a handful and reprogram them to take apart plastics, for example, or petroleum, or use them as assassination weapons. You're talking about gobblers, for Christ's sake. I know that, Humphreys said coldly. Cardenas shook her head. It won't work. Aside from the sheer physical scale of the project, the authorities on Earth would never grant approval for using nanomachines. Never. And I can't say that I'd blame them. Humphreys slowly got to his feet. You refuse to even try? It's a hopeless task. He sighed theatrically. Well, I've tried to be reasonable. I thought we might be able to work something out. Let me go, Cardenas said, with a pleading note in her voice. I thought it would be a way for you to be with your grandchildren, as you want to be. Just let me go. He gave her a sad look. You know I can't do that. It's too great a risk for me. You can't keep me here forever. With a small shrug, Humphreys asked, What do you propose as a way out of this impasse? She stared at him, open-mouthed. I mean, you can see my problem. I know you can. How can I let you go when there's every chance that you'll tell people that I'm responsible for Dan Randall's death?
But I'm responsible, too.
Yes, I know. But you'd confess to it, wouldn't you? She hesitated, then said in a low, defeated voice, I suppose I would, sooner or later. There you are, Humphreys said softly. The problem remains. You're going to have to kill me. I don't want to do that. I'm not a cold-blooded murderer. In fact, I'd like to see you reunited with your grandchildren, if it's at all possible. There must be some way we can work together, some way we can find around this. I'm sure you can come up with a solution if you just put your mind to it. He smiled as he opened the door and left. George saw the guard standing out in the hallway before Humphreys closed the door and its lock clicked shut. As he strode down the hallway, Humphreys mused to himself, "It could work. If we could spread enough nanomachines, I could break the greenhouse warming in a couple of years. They'd be on their knees with gratitude." He decided to put a small team of experts together to study the possibilities dispassionately. Cardenas isn't the only nanotechnology guru in Cellini, he assured himself.
End of Side 13.
Breakout. Chris Cardenas stared at the locked door for several silent moments after Humphreys left. Then she suddenly broke into racking sobs. Face buried in her hands, body bent, she stumbled to the bed and threw herself onto it, crying inconsolably. George stood uncertainly in the far corner of the bedroom, wondering what he should do. "She's already hysterical," he said to himself. "I'll go and tap her on the shoulder and say, 'Hi, I'm an invisible man.' She'll probably freak out altogether." So he waited, fidgeting unhappily until Cardenas stopped crying. It didn't take long. She sat up on the bed, took a deep breath, then got to her feet and went to the laboratory. "You can't stand there like a fucking idiot forever," George told himself. "Do something." Before he could decide what to do, Cardenas walked to the window and pressed her fingers against the glass. Then she turned and seemed to survey the room. With a slight nod, she walked to the bare little desk and picked up its wooden cushioned chair. It seemed heavy for her, but she carried it, tottering slightly, to the window. "She wants to crash the window and jump out of here," George realized. "She'll just end up hurting herself." He touched her arm slightly and whispered, "Excuse me." Cardenas flinched and let the chair thump to the carpeting. She blinked, stared, saw nothing. "Excuse me, Dr. Cardenas," George whispered. She spun around in a complete circle, eyes wide. "Who said that?" George cleared his throat and replied a little louder, "It's me. George Ambrose. Where the hell are you?" George felt slightly embarrassed. "I'm invisible." "I'm going crazy," Cardenas muttered. She sank down onto the chair, right there in the middle of the room. "No, you're not," George said, still keeping his voice low. "I'm a pal of Dan Randolph's. I'm here to get you out of this place. This is a trick. Is this room bugged? Do they have any cameras in here?"
"I don't think so."
"Look," George said, then immediately realized it was a foolish term to use.
"I'm going to take off my hood so you can see me face. Don't get scared now."
Cardenas looked more suspicious than frightened. George yanked the hood off his head and pulled off his face mask. It felt good to feel cool air on his skin. She jumped out of the chair.
"Christ almighty."
"Nah, just me," he said, with a slight grin.
"George Ambrose. I work for Dan Randolph, you know."
Comprehension lit her eyes.
Walton's stealth suit. He didn't destroy it after all.
"You know about it?"
"And me and four other people. There's a few more now," George said.
"How in the world did you ever..."
"No time for that now. We got to get you out of here."
"How?"
George scratched at his beard.
"Good question."
"You didn't bring along a suit for me, did you?" Cardenas asked.
"Should have, shouldn't I? We just didn't think of it. We weren't certain where you were."
"So what do we do?" George thought it over for a few moments.
"They keep you in this room all the time?"
Cardenas nodded.
"Door's locked, isn't it?"
"Yes. And there's a guard outside. At least every time they brought a meal in to me, there's been a guard out in the hall. I imagine he's armed." George's face lit up.
"When do they bring you meals? When's the next one coming?"
Several hours later, there was a single rap on the door, and then Cardenas heard the lock click. She glanced swiftly about the room, but could no longer see George. The door opened, and the same silent, sour-faced woman in dark uniform came in carrying a dinner tray. Cardenas could see a wiry young man standing on the other side of the doorway. The woman deposited the tray wordlessly on the coffee table in front of the sofa, and then departed, silent and dour. The guard closed the door and locked it again. Cardenas sat on the sofa. For the first time in days, She had an appetite. She felt